K-Mud Podcast presents.
Mountains got a feel, the river's running thin. She's sick with concrete sorrow and the careless cruel sin. They stripped the skin and broke the bones and called it progress free. But they don't know the secrets that the wind whispers to me.
They dig for oil, they search for gold. They never look beneath, they took the land, but they can't touch the sacred vital breath.
They call us protest makers when we fight for clean, pure streams. But we are just the keepers of the land's forgotten dream. The soil remembers our feet, the corn remembers our prayers. We are the roots that hold the canyons, the children of the bay. Is woven in our marrow and our bone.
No, we are vital to the soil. We are the only truth she knows. We are the ones that feed the seeds when the poison wind blows.
Turtle Island's heart beats native, though the maps are drawn by thieves. And if you the land, you will weep when the nation grieves.
The spirit of the people, the spirit of the earth, tell me, where is your country's true sacred word?
The genocide ain't finished. Ooh. It just wears a different coat.
Ooh.
It's in the pipelines poisoning.
Ooh.
The water's in your throat.
Ooh.
The missing sister's silent screams.
Ooh.
Are buried in the wood.
Ooh.
That same neglect and cruelty, misunderstood. Kill the keepers, the earth stops singing.
The immigrant heart is searching for a home that feels like truth. And my heart knows they deserve that peace, the promise meant for you.
When you deport a mother, whose hands have built the town, you tear the last bit of decency in this stolen structure down. The hate that drives the Iceman is the same that took the trail. It's the same cold fear of goodness, the same bitter broken way.
Memory of the land is the debt you haven't paid yet.
We are not tourists.
sacred
urgent plea. Nobody is illegal
on the soil that needs us to be free.
Good morning and welcome to Heart of the Earth. This is a program about Native Americans and other Indigenous cultures. My name is Agnes, and I'll be with you until 10 a.m. And I opened with a wonderful group. They're called We Are Still Here, and they gave us No One Is Illegal on Stolen Land, and it's from a self-titled CD. And yes, how could I not want to at least start a song like that after Billie Eilish said it on at the Grammys the other night, that no one was illegal on stolen land. And I have another story a little bit about that later, but I really appreciated that she said it. And of course, the Magna people, found a way to just start, taking jabs at it and then saying, oh, well, they didn't, they should have said that they're on the Gabrielo and the Tongva land. And, and so whose land that is in Los Angeles? And they responded by saying, well, yeah, it would have been nice if she mentioned us, but they were really grateful that she said anything at all, And then the MAGA people, oh, well, Billie should just give up her mansions to the Indians, And it's like, any way to start a controversy when someone says something so righteous to an international stage. It was, thank you, Billie. And to all the other performers, the war ice buttons or made a comment about no ice. Because, yes, I thought, okay, I've talked about it the last two shows. Am I really going to do it a third time? Yes, I am, because it's not going away. Yes, I'd like to talk about the horrible things that Trump is doing to the national parks, removing, so much knowledge for people to learn about the land that that they're on right there, the tribes that were there, the nations that were there. But as long as things are still going on in Minneapolis, although this morning whoever that guy is now, Hovind Håkon, he said, oh, yeah, well, we're going to remove, 700 of the ICE agents out of Minneapolis. But I believe there's like 3,000 there. But this is from Nick Estes. He has a wonderful articles that he has and a podcast he has. He's from the Lakota Nation. And, he's on Substack. And he goes, not Minnesota nice. And he says, we are living through a moment of profound danger. Operation Metro Surge is barely 2 months old, and there is still no end in sight. Nowhere is safe, not schools, daycares, parks, shopping centers, or hospitals. What was presented as a crackdown on the worst of the worst has calcified into something far more perilous. An open-ended campaign of terror and political theater carried out on the occupied streets of Minneapolis and increasingly across other parts of Minnesota. A permanent state of emergency has settled in. The presence of federal officers who outnumber local police is no longer exceptional, but routine. Murder and abduction are treated as collateral. Terror itself appears to be the policy, not the byproduct. Some call it fascism. Others call it something much worse. And I want to interject here, because yesterday I watched the testimony of victims on the U.S. Capitol, and it was gut-wrenching to hear their experiences, and it affected everyone that was there. I mean, Amy Klobuchar, the senator from Minneapolis, from Minnesota, was just holding back her tears. It was just, to hear several of these women, this young man, the brothers of Renee Good, they all spoke about what was going on. And the one woman who was born in northern Michigan, and how she got pulled from a car and what she went through when they put her in detention camp. It was just horrible. And she said, she's just listening to the way they spoke. And, it was like when they brought in seven more people, it's got, we got seven more bodies. And that's what they called, that's what they were calling the people they were bringing in. It's just really horrendous to the way they're treating human beings. But to continue, What matters more than the name is a recognition that this is not unprecedented. The truth is that this isn't the first time we've been here, and perhaps it isn't the worst time in the history of this land, a fact that offers no comfort to those living through the present nightmare. The present reality is untenable, as it must be, and everyday people are fighting back, as history suggests they always do. That's why clarity is necessary. The country in which we now live is severely menaced, not by Putin, Z, or the Alatoya, but the guy from Iran, but from within. And it has almost always been from within, despite America's recurring insistence on locating its demons elsewhere. The first enemy was, according to this country's founding document, the, quote, merciless Indian savages in the hinterlands of its ever-expanding empire. By the time the nation's leaders drafted the first constitution in 1787, the edge of that empire extended all the way to the confluence of the Mississippi and Minnesota rivers, a place Dakota people called Beto, and territory they called Minnesota Mache. The assertion of sovereignty preceded any real authority. In no way did those early Americans have any influence or control over the territory that they had laid claim to. It was mostly a foreign, unknown land. The original name, Minnesota Mache, translated as, quote, the land where the water reflects the sky, incorporates the foundational relationship of its original caretakers with the water, earth, and sky, and the living beings, seen and unseen, who dwell among them. Early records show little interest on the part of the Americans in understanding, let alone honoring, that relationship to place. One might conjure the more recent phrase, quote, land of the 10,000 lakes, when trying to understand the meaning of Minnesota Mache. There are lots of lakes, but the phrase only gestures toward what the original name fully apprehends. My understanding of this land is certainly changing and deepening the longer I live. I also like to imagine the wintertime. When thinking about this name and its relation it evokes. And I just want to mention here, Nick Estes is a college professor at a college in Minneapolis, so he's right there where it's all happening. But to continue, he says, in winter, water covers the earth in the form of snow, and when it's cold enough, airborne moisture crystallizes into ice, refracting the sun into prisms of color. Several mornings this winter have blessed me with the serenity of witnessing this effect in the form of sun dogs, the two rainbow-colored spots that flank the sun like sentinels when the conditions are just right. Indeed, a land where water reflects the sky is not bound by season. I can think of no place name in English that evokes so much beauty and wonder. The subtleties and nuances of that intimacy with the land and the deep reciprocities and responsibilities it entails were invisible to those who came to conquer it and remain so for those who continue that relationship of conquest. The 1805 treaty with the Dakota, ceding land for what would later become the Fort Snelling at Beauté, states clearly the intentions of the United States, establish a military presence and project force in the region. The treaty itself didn't get full content of Dakota people, just two leaders signed, nor did it meet the minimum legal criteria for validity. An 1856 Senate Military Affairs Committee found, quote, no evidence that it was ever a legally binding treaty. The first presence of the United States came about through the construction of a military installation atop Beauté, a Dakota site of emergence and creation. The nation's initial intentions were clear. Conquest requires a different set of relations and entails fundamentally different behaviors and practices. It requires destruction and replacement. Upon this foundation, the state erects its own superstructures of law, knowledge, and legitimacy. and it appears to understand its own unbelonging and tenuous control over the land. Otherwise, why would it need to exert so much force and fashion legal justifications and cultural narratives that originate from elsewhere? And what kind of belonging demands sustained violence against the land and its people? From Fort Snelling, the United States sent soldiers to crush the Dakota uprising against colonial rule, imprison Dakota people in a concentration camp just below the fort, and expel them from their homelands. That function has not changed. The agents who abduct and terrorize my neighbors, attack daycare centers, schools, and hospitals, and who shot and killed Renee Good and Alex Petty are performing the same functions and designs as the original Fort Snelling. They are headquartered at the same location using the same name and intention to intimidate, punish, and eliminate anyone who stands in their way. right. That was the Red Shadow Singers from the Ojibwe Anishinaabe Nation, Minneapolis is, and they gave us Manito Ape, a return to the center. Yes, I'm going to share this with you. I just love Julie Francella, and she's been just writing some incredible pieces. I have to say she's just really one of my favorite essayists, with Native issues, because she gets it. She really gets it because she lives it. That is who she is. And she says, Sunday you might have heard Billie Eilish repeat what many of us have been saying for decades. Nobody is illegal on stolen land. And you may have heard Bad Bunny's statement, ice out. We're not savages. We're not animals. We're not aliens. We are humans and we are Americans. Some people hear those lines and immediately act confused or offended or both. So let me slow it down and be clear about the language we're using. America isn't just one country. It's the Americas. Long before colonial borders, passports, or legal categories, indigenous peoples moved, traded, intermarried, and built relationships across this entire landmass. The lines on today's maps are recent. Our existence here is ancient. So when people cling to illegal as if these borders are part of the original landscape, they're repeating a colonial story that starts on a foundation of lies. And that's exactly why some people rush in with the same tired comeback. You lost. And the argument that always shows up right after, quote, it isn't stolen land, it is conquered land. That's where I want to be clear about why we use words like stolen and theft. We are not a conquered people. That is a misconception. It's an attempt at the power flex, and more glaringly, in a way to shut the conversation down instead of facing what actually happened here. When people say, you lost or you're conquered, it tells me they don't understand the history of this land. They are trying to dismiss indigenous existence with a taunt, and it's convenient because the United States didn't build its claim here through conquest. It expanded through treaties with indigenous nations and then repeatedly broke those treaties when land, gold, oil, railroads, and political power were on the line. It's a paper trail of coercion, disposition, lying, and rewritten rules whenever the U.S. decided it wanted more. Anyone who actually knows the history knows how those treaties were often made through coercion, deception, starvation conditions, intimidation, and manipulation. Through translators and negotiators who lied, through pressure that left no real choice, through terms that were not honored. Then came the next step, and that part that makes legal feel like a joke. The United States repeatedly broke its own legally binding treaties. It allowed settlers into reserved lands. It failed to deliver payment and provisions. It ignored boundaries when resources were discovered. It rewrote rules when convenient. And look at what is happening today. It's all too familiar to our indigenous nations. When this administration wants something, it calls its goals order, calls its opponents threats, and then uses the law like a weapon. It floods a place with authority, manufactures a climate of fear, and demands that everyone accept it as normal. That's exactly how treaty violations work, too. Break the agreement, move the line, then punish whoever refuses to pretend nothing happened. This is why the word illegal is so useful to the state. Once you can label a human being illegal, you can treat them like they don't belong. And once you treat them like they don't belong, you can do almost anything to them and call it enforcement. It's the same logic that turned indigenous people into obstacles, then wards, then problems to be removed. So when I watch what's happening in Minneapolis right now, people being intimidated in public, treated like they don't have rights, forced to move through their own city like they're trespassing, I'm not seeing an isolated event. I'm seeing a pattern. Power first, justification second. So if your argument is might makes right, then don't pretend it's about ethics, Christianity, or democracy. Just say what you mean, power. But if you do believe in rule of law, then you have to reckon with the original law of this land, of this place, treaties, and the long documented history of violating them when land and resources were the prize. That's why, quote, nobody is illegal on stolen land hits hard. It points straight at the hypocrisy at the center, a state that violated its own agreement, still claiming the moral authority to decide who belongs, who gets to stay, and who gets called illegal. So many people reach out to me saying they feel hopeless. I get it. But I'm not giving up on the idea that we can move forward in a good way. Indigenous nations have carried our values through centuries of pressure meant to erase us, and that alone tells you something. A different way of living is possible, and if I've learned anything from working in healing spaces, is that healing rarely moves in a straight line. It lurches. It stalls. It's often 2 steps forward and 5 steps back. That doesn't mean it's failing. It means the work is real and we have to keep going. For me, the path forward starts with a basic shift. It asks people, especially privileged Americans, to confront internalized racism and inherited colonial worldviews. It asks people to do something most of this country has been trained to avoid. Look directly at the water you've been swimming in your whole life. Internalized racism and inherited colonial worldviews aren't just the loud, obvious stuff. They're the quiet defaults, the common sense assumptions that get treated as neutral when they're anything but. It's the reflex to believe institutions first and marginalized people second. The reflex to equate comfort with safety and then to build policy around protecting certain people's comfort at the expense of other people's lives. It's the belief that property matters more than people and that the economy is a god we have to keep fed no matter who gets sacrificed. It's also the story that we're taught about this country. This story begins with discovery, which calls invasion settlement, that treats treaties like footnotes instead of binding promises, and that frames indigenous people as the past instead of living nations in the present. It's the way whiteness is positioned as the default human experience, and everyone else is treated as an identity group, a special interest, a problem, or a threat. Confronting that doesn't mean drowning in guilt. It means telling the truth with humility. It means listening when people describe harm instead of arguing with them. And it means recognizing that the work shows up in what you tolerate, what you challenge, what you vote for, what you fund, what you repeat, and who you protect. I invite you all to take a lesson from Indigenous people. Hope is a practice. Hope is refusing to let injustice become normal. Hope is telling the truth about the road that brought us here, recognizing the pattern as it repeats and building something better, even when it's difficult. And I want to share with you Indigenous, what she says, Indigenous worldview. Life in balance with the natural world. Women, men, and all inhabitants of the earth are equal. The land and animals are sacred. Community and being in good relations with others are paramount. A diverse experience and voices are welcomed. Wealth and personal success should be shared with community. And the colonial worldview? Man is at top of hierarchy over women and the natural world. Land and natural world is to be conquered and exploited. Superiority of certain races. Individual success and personal wealth are paramount. Compartmentalized society. Homogeneity of thoughts, beliefs, and values.
The treaty story, of course, begins before there was a United States, because it was nation to nation amongst the native nations and the European nations.
The story's told with lies, lies, lies.
The treaty signed.
Since the founding of this country, the U.S. government has made and broken over 500 treaties with various Indian tribes all across our nation.
War was lost, the treaty signed.
They were unilateral agreements between two sovereigns, meaning that it was indigenous people here and the U.S. government, and it was equal. We still retain that. The other way that it's supported and retained, even though the U.S. government refuses sometimes to recognize that, and maybe these younger people that are listening to this can change this, because this is about healing. It's about forgiving. Do you know what the sixth article of the U.S. Constitution is? That treaties are the supreme law of the land. It actually says that in the U.S. Constitution. Treaties are the supreme law of the land.
The treaty signed. The treaty signed. I had a name, but never mind.
Now, it turns out that the problem with treaties begins not on the native side, but like many problems, begins on the western side.
The U.S. government has made and broken over 500 treaties with various Indian tribes.
Most of the non-native people think of Indian treaties as Indian treaties. They don't think of them as their treaties. And these are everyone's treaties. These are the United States and the Native Nations, and we all have rights and we all have responsibilities. The United States gained a territory over which to govern through treaties. If you don't know treaty, and I'm not talking about treaty law, but if you don't know treaties, you just don't know American history.
But never mind. The treaty signed. The treaty signed.
Why is it important that the American people understand this? I mean, most people study a little bit about Native American history and maybe in school, but then it for many, I think it disappears from our daily news diet. So why was this important, and specifically the treaty? Why look at the treaties?
We felt the United States, we felt the people needed a civics lesson and a reminder that the Constitution doesn't just refer to the federal government and the state governments, it also refers to the Indian tribes.
The treaty signed. The treaty signed.
Healing. This is about healing. Heal, heal, healing. Younger people healing. Younger people healing. This is about healing. This is about healing. Younger people healing. Younger people healing. This is about healing. This is about healing.
The war was lost. The treaty signed. I was not caught across the line. I was not caught, though many tried. I live among you, well disguised.
Since the founding of this country, the U.S. government has made and broken over 500 treaties with various Indian tribes all across our nation.
But never mind.
And that was Frank Walm, Treaties, from his great CD, Songs Against Colonialism. And I just want to share like one story from you. I mean, there's so many different, stories of what has taken place in, all across this country. But on his way to Alligator Alcatraz with my friend, and this comes from Cliff Cash, he says whose friend is Arian Nani, whose father is being held there illegally. He had a work permit and was following all the steps being asked of him. He was abducted when showing up for his check-in, following the legal process that was asked of him. He's 55 years old and has physical and mental health issues, including extreme diabetic issues, and needs insulin twice a day. He wasn't given insulin for the first month that he was held. Right now, he spends his days chained to a hospital bed, restrained by his hands and feet. He's lost 30 pounds while in custody, and he says he has hunger pangs. The food they are given is barely enough to survive, and some don't. Alligator Alcatraz has no indoor plumbing. The food and water are subpar and unsafe. The grounds and even the building flood when it rains heavily. Sometimes the water comes up to the beds. There are people being held here on oxygen. Even quadriplegics being held here in concentration camp-like conditions. Paraplegics being held. 1,800 people previously held here are missing, literally missing to the point that their families have no contact with them and no way of knowing where they are or how to find them. Even their attorneys have no way of knowing where they are or how to help them. Some have been sent to El Salvador or even the concentration camps in places like Uganda. Adrian's dad was taken to the Mexican border, and ICE wanted to essentially force him into Mexico. He left Cuba when he was 13 and was brought to the U.S. by the American Red Cross. Mexico said he was too ill to enter and was sent back. He has witnessed two people die in front of him during the ICE custody and also witnessed a third take their own life. This is what MAGA wants. This is who MAGA is. This is their Christianity. This is their patriotism. If only they hated pedophiles as much as they hate this father of three U.S. citizens. And one more thing I want to mention is that, Bovino, who was the head of it, and then Trump got rid of him. Well, he drove back to California and he stopped at Mount Rushmore, and he gave this little speech to his people in front of Mount Rushmore. And then he went to Wyoming, and people saw him at the hotel, and they reported on it. And it's just incredible. He called Turn and Burn. What I'm going to do is I'm just going to play what he said at Mount Rushmore.
Team, behind me are a few individuals there. That's the original Turn and Burn, the folks that helped make America. But you know what? I'm very proud of what you, the Mean Green Machine, are doing in Minneapolis right now, just like you've done it across the United States over these past tough 9 months. And I want you to know that you're the modern day equivalent. Turn and Burn makes me very proud. I also want you to know that I've got your back now and always. I love you, I support you, and I salute you.
Yeah. Incredible. Right in front of Mount Rushmore. I just laughed. I mean, I just couldn't believe that he would, do that. I want to share with you a Dakota woman's recount of the 48 hours that she was held in ICE immigration. And she said more than 162 years after the Medawakatan Dakota people were forcibly detained and held at Fort Snelling in Minnesota, Kawantan woman found herself detained in the same place her ancestors had been. On the drive into Fort Snelling, Sophie Watso, 30, said she closed her eyes and prayed. She sang a song in Dakota, a prayer song asking her ancestors for guidance. Upwards of 3,000 Dakota and Ho-Chunk people were imprisoned at Fort Snelling, a concentration camp during the winter of 1862 following the Dakota Indian Wars, and approximately 300 Native people died there. Aside from being the site of a former concentration camp, the area is also a site of creation of the Dakota people, Be-Dote. Where the Minnesota and Mississippi rivers meet, is one of the Dakota people's creation sites. Today, Dote is visible from the bluffs at the historic Fort Snelling complex. As historic immigration raids pay across the Twin Cities, several Native people have reported being detained at Fort Snelling. The Bishop Henry Whipple Building in Fort Snelling is being used as an ICE detainment and processing facility by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. Watsa was detained on Wednesday, January 14th in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, a suburb immediately north of the city of Minneapolis. Watsa wasn't released from ICE custody until January 16th, more than 48 hours after her initial encounter with ICE. The Dakota woman said she was monitoring ICE activity from her vehicle when agents and another group who she initially believed were local law enforcement approached her in her truck. Video shows agents with the words police ICE on their vest, which makes Watso believe that they were all immigration enforcement personnel. Some agents or officers in the area have had the words police or ICE labeled on them. Quote, it was very confusing situations, he said, quote, because of the way they, ICE agents, did not identify themselves, right? One agent told Watso she was in violation of U.S. Code 18, Section 111, which is a federal charge pertaining to imposing, obstructing, or assaulting a federal law enforcement agent while on duty. ICE agents are allowed to detain U.S. citizens believed to be in violation of the code. ICE agents have used the same charge against at least two other Native American people, William LaFramboise, assistant Wahpeton Dakota man arrested while protesting ICE on January 26, and Jose Beto Ramirez, a Red Lake Nation descendant detained on January 7th. Ramirez was charged nearly 2 weeks after his detainment. Watso said one of the men told her she was impeding or obstructing an ongoing federal immigration investigation, but another told her if she didn't stop what she was doing, she would then be in violation of the code. Quote, a lot of people were talking at the same time, she said. Quote, at that point, I was already pulled over, so I had already stopped everything. I stopped everything I was doing. Agents asked for identification. Watso said she did not feel comfortable stepping out of her vehicle or handing over her ID. Some tribes have reported incidents where individuals posing as ICE questioned members and asked for their identification. Roughly 3 hours south of Minneapolis, the Meswaki Nation in Tama, Iowa, reported at least one tribal member was questioned by men in nearby Toledo, Iowa, pretending to be immigration agents. The tribe said upon investigation, the individuals were confirmed not to be ICE personnel. Quote, I didn't know who these people were, Watso said. Quote, they were just some masked men that approached my window, so I didn't feel comfortable giving them my identification. Moments later, Watso said the agents used a window breaker to smash in her truck's driver's side and passenger side windows. Watso's dog, a small Pomeranian named Modine, was sitting on the passenger seat. She grabbed Modine to try and shield him from the shattered glass. Around her, prairie sage from her dashboard fell around the truck. Watso, who is 5'2" tall, said it wasn't difficult for the agents to pull her out of her truck from the broken window and place her on the ground. She held tight to her dog, who she feared was injured from the broken glass. Quote, there was nothing I could hold on to, she said. I was just holding on to my dog, and they put me on the ground on top of the glass they just broke. And that's when they were just trying to rip my dog from my arms. Watso said agents grabbed Modine from her arms and took him away from her before laying her face down on the ground on top of the broken glass. A few agents leaned their full weight on her back and placing her in handcuffs. She could barely breathe, she said. Fortunately, some of her friends were in the area and were able to record the interaction, she said. Quote, I was yelling to them, she said. I told them, tell them where my dog is, and they were also malicious about that. Watso said her friends were able to locate her dog at a nearby pound while officers drove her to the Whipple Building in Fort Snelling for processing. Her friends then took her dog to stay with Watso's mother. At this point, knowing she was on her way to Fort Snelling, Watso began to sing. quote, "So it was important to me to sing a song, one of the only songs that I know by heart," she said. "It's a prayer song, and it's asking for help." She felt like she was captured, she said, and began reflecting on what her Medawakatan ancestors had experienced a century ago. Quote, "The words in this song are asking for help, telling the Creator that I want to live," she said. Quote, "Not only am I praying for my safety, but I was also praying and wanting to greet my ancestors in our language with a song, because I know that my ancestors are there." Agents began to make fun of her singing, she said, asking her if she was on drugs, but she didn't care. Quote, "I don't do drugs and I don't drink alcohol, but I expected that from them," she said. "I understood that these people are colonized and they have the intention of degrading you." She made sure to look them in the eyes as she sang. Quote, "I wasn't going to show them that I was a spectacle," she said. Once inside the Whipple building, Watso said she waited for several hours in a warehouse-like facility, her arms and legs shackled. She felt scared, but oddly enough, confronted at the same time, knowing her ancestors were there, she said. Quote, "I knew that I wasn't alone. I knew that my people have suffered here, but I also knew that people have lived here." She said she took comfort in that fact. While detained, Watson said she was not offered an opportunity to speak with the lawyer. She said at one point verbally requested to speak with a lawyer, but was not given the opportunity. Since she was not able to speak with a lawyer, Watson was further transferred out of the Whipple building into an ICE partner facility, the Sherborne County Jail. Sherborne was a much better experience than being kept at the Whipple building, she said. Quote, "The people at Sherborne County, these are just sheriffs, people who work there, and they're actually nice to you," she said. Quote, "They actually treat you like a human. They ask you if you want water, and then they give it to you. They talk to you normally like a person." In Sherborne on Thursday, January 15th, Watson said, was finally given an opportunity to make phone calls. Watson was then able to contact a lawyer and since has been working with the Native American Rights Fund, a nonprofit organization dedicated to the legal protection of indigenous people, tribes, and tribal organizations. Because no charges were filed against her, Watson was let go from Sherborne after a 48-hour hold on Friday, January 16th. Following her release from Sherborne, Watson said she was taken back to the Whipple building in Fort Schelling by two Homeland Security Department agents. Watson was given paperwork and her possessions back at Fort Snelling and informed she could now go home, but it wasn't the end, she said. While leaving, Watson said she wasn't given clear instructions by the agents on how to exit the building. While making her way through the parking lot, jogging to speed up her journey due to the below freezing temperatures, Watson was tackled by several ICE agents who assumed she was attempting to break out of the facility. Watson said at least four agents dressed in full gear tackled her, leaving her back pain and further traumatizing her. She was placed back in handcuffs and again taken into the Whipple building, where another agent verified she had been released from custody, at which point she was freed again, this time with a ride home. Quote, "It's all on surveillance video," she said. Quote, "Here I am free, running, and then I'm tackled, brutalized, cuffed back up, and brought back inside. Every time I go outside now, my head is on a swivel, like left, right, turn behind you. Is there anyone behind me? I'm traumatized." Watson said, as of January 26, she had not been able to go to the hospital to have her injuries evaluated. She has, however, been able to visit with a therapist and is staying with friends for safety. "The experience has left her completely terrified," she said. "Since she's staying with friends, on one occasion she accidentally locked herself out of the apartment and began to panic." Quote, "I was here alone and I was outside and I didn't have anything, any identification on me, so I was immediately terrified," she said. Fortunately, a couple welcomed her into their home until her brother was able to come pick her up. Quote, that was a crazy feeling, she said. Quote, for people like me who look like me, you don't even want to leave your house because you're scared ICE is going to take you. Watso said she wants to share her story to raise awareness to what's really happening in Minneapolis, a place she moved to 2 years ago to be closer to her ancestral homelands. Quote, I moved back to reconnect to the land and my people and to live on this land, she said. So many people don't get to live on their ancestral homelands in America, so I felt like it was important to do that. After hearing about charges pressed against Jose Ramirez, a Red Lake Nation descendant who was detained by ICE the week prior, Watso was scared of the potential for the same thing to happen to her. Quote, I feel like it's important to speak out about what happened to me, she said. Being surrounded by friends and family is helping her heal, she said. Leaning on prayer and medicine has helped to center her. I haven't been to Sweat yet, but I'm planning on it, she said. I know that's there's definitely a lot to process, but at the same time, I don't want to. I don't want to think about it. And, yeah. So, I was hoping to get the jingle dance that was done. It was just incredible. You know, the indigenous women, the indigenous people, they went to the site where Renee Good was murdered, and then later to the site where Alex Petrie was murdered. And they did a jingle dance, an Ojibwe jingle dance. It's a healing dance. And it was just so powerful. And how, no matter how cold it was, it was just incredible to, you know, watch it and to know just how important it is that these ceremonies are done, even though it's indigenous people that are doing this, but they're doing it for everyone because everyone in Minneapolis needs healing. They need prayers. And it's, as I said, it was really hard listening yesterday to the testimony of the people and what's been done to them. And it really hurts. It hurts if you hold all human beings equal in your heart. And it's really hard when you have someone that's supposed to be the president of this country who is heartless and soulless and only cares about himself. That's why we have to care. We have to care for each other. We have to love each other. And I know it's hard sometimes. And I remember when I saw my friend, she was telling me, you know, in Seattle, because it's hard, you know, when she goes to a lot, you know, she goes to the King Days and all that. She said, because, you know, you almost feel like white privilege because she goes, it's just all white people. And I said, Annette, that's because people of color can't go. They'll be picked up. They're the ones that'll get hurt. Right now, they're using all kinds of identification imaging. And they're just, you know, the sous chef, he's been speaking out in Minneapolis in his restaurant. What happened? The car that had all those workers that were going to work, they followed him. And they thought they could just get to the back door and get into the restaurant, but ICE broke the windows before they even could and pulled one of their workers out. And the sous chef was in Park City when that happened. But they knew. I'm going to close with this song because I just think it's really says it all.
Let's get started with Cruzando Fronteras. For all the workers in the fields, in the factories, in the hotels, in the motels, they keep crossing for the betterment of their people. Que siguen cruzando, vamos.
familia para sueño americano.
Hoy cruzando la frontera, portando mi bandera, dejando mi familia.
Con poca agua para tomar, con poca sombra para descansar. Este solonazo me va a quemar. Con el favor de la Virgen voy a cruzar otro lado a trabajar.
Guardando mi bandera, dejando mi familia
para sueño americano.
Hoy cruzando la frontera, guardando mi bandera, dejando mi familia.
Con recuerdos de mi pueblito, de mis hijos, de mi ranchito. Ojalá que llegue a la buena vida, a la buena vida de
guardando mi bandera, dejando mi familia
para ser americano.
Hoy cruzando la frontera, guardando mi bandera, dejando mi familia.
¡Lucha, cruza! Coyote me va a robar, este camino largo me va a matar, este río bravo me va a ahogar, y las paredes de Babilonia las voy a tumbar, otro lado a trabajar.
Hoy cruzando la frontera, guardando mi bandera, dejando mi familia.
This has been a KMUT podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast and also on our website, kmud.org.